Good morning, Real Life Chapel.
Good morning.
Good to see you guys. And like I said, I'm going to continue to say good morning to those who are watching via Facebook, because I was one of those for a while. So I greatly know what a blessing that can be, to be able to be a part of your church family, even when you're unable to be present in the room. So this morning, going to do something, actually going to be taking the next 2 weeks. So if this is your first time here in a while, not so much are you going to hear a sermon today. I'm not really going to preach or teach as much as I'm just going to share a story today. And I'm going to take the next 2 weeks to share it, because there's a whole lot in it, and I would be unable to get it in all of it into this space today. But I want to share our sabbatical story with you. Kind of like, again, as I mentioned last week, kind of our twist on the what did you do on your summer vacation kind of thing. So, our sabbatical, so the sabbatical, if that's a word that, you know, somebody's unfamiliar with, the concept of the idea, it's based on Sabbath, right? So Sabbath, you know, we have 6 days, and then we're supposed to have a Sabbath, a day of rest. But it's not just a day of rest and relaxation, but it's a day of dedication to the Lord, right? So that's really what a Sabbath is about. So the idea of a sabbatical is an extended period of time to do just that. It is to provide relaxation and rest and that kind of stuff, but it's also to be time dedicated to the Lord and to God. And so as a pastor, part of the ministry with the Church of the Nazarene, that's one of the things that they have felt truly benefits their pastors, but also benefits the congregations and the churches in which they serve. And so they encourage the pastors to take a sabbatical every 5 years, once every 5 years, to take an extended time away to kind of reset, right, and to kind of refocus and recenter yourselves, and then come back into ministry. And so, the policy is you have to serve at the exact same place for a minimum of 5 years before you're eligible, and then every 5 years. And it used to be every 7, but over the past 20 years, they've seen such an attrition rate. They've seen so many people quitting ministry and walking away from it. From burnout and other reasons, that they just decided to shorten it, make it once every 5 years. And so that had come due this year, this past year. And so Laura Lee and I were heading out, and this was going to be our second sabbatical here in a ministry here. We just celebrated 11 years, so we're in our 12th year of ministry here at Real Life Chapel. So we're in the 12th year of the existence of Real Life Chapel. But so anyway, our sabbatical, we were on our sabbatical, and our sabbatical turned into sick leave. That's not what they're supposed to do, right? That's not the plan. In fact, I have a lot of my colleagues that are now telling me I don't know how to sabbatical very well, right? Wasn't my plan, but I'll just say, because of that, I'm very grateful to be standing here. And standing here today. And so I just want to share the story. Somebody deserves applause. It's not me, I can tell you that. But I want to share the story of kind of what we went through, some of the experiences we had during this time. Our sabbatical was scheduled to be from May 6th to July 6th, right? That was the time frame. We were going to be gone 2 months, May 6th, July 6th. And it was fantastic. I couldn't have asked for a better send-off than the evening, the convergence evening we had, that night of worship, gathering together with Oasis Covenant's congregation. We had a phenomenal night, an incredible night of worship, and so that was a real blessing for us to be sent off with that. And then the next day, we went to the airport to pick up our son, and daughter-in-law had flown in from Colorado, and then we were going to have dinner over at our daughter's house. And so we've got our kids all together and our grandchildren, and just a good time, good way to start. And there was a lot of different things we were planning. Now, originally, Originally, our thought process is that we were going to put together for our sabbatical, we were going to go on a study tour. And so we wanted to go on a study tour of Greece and Turkey. So that was the original plan. That's where we were going to head for this time. And so as we began looking into it and finding the time frame and the different trips that were out there where we could go and study and we could walk in the footsteps of Paul, the Apostle Paul, go to the seven churches of Revelation, all these different things that were going to be a part of this study tour, as we started lining those things up, we ran into some complications. And the complications really weren't with the trip or the finances or any of the pieces. All of that had been put together for this, but we ran into complications back here. And the complications we had was with having our home and our dog taken care of in our absence. And now, I don't know about you, but we have a dog. We have a 13-year-old Chih Poo, right? Half Chihuahua, half Poodle. His name is Mr. Frodo, right? And he has no clue that he is a dog. In fact, I think if he were to discover it, it would break his heart. And so, you know, it's a big deal. And so we have, usually there's two caregivers that provide. We've had other people that have helped us out, but we had two primary sources or resources that we leaned on in the past. Whenever we would go on a trip to Colorado, or we went to a trip to Israel or somewhere, there were those that we could count on to care for Mr. Frodo, or those that we trusted to give the key to our home and say, hey, stay here, take care of the dog, right? All that kind of stuff. And the complications came up because Laura Lee's parents, my wife's parents, are usually one of the folks that we can count on to do that. And they had had this past year for them just really has been a difficult year with medical challenges. And the medical challenges that they were wrestling with greatly limited their mobility. So it wasn't going to work very well. And then the other person that we had really counted on a lot, and she was really our primary home watcher, caregiver of Mr. Frodo, and that was Sarah Wise. And Sarah, you need to remember that name, it's going to come up again, but Sarah was unable to do it because she had moved to Virginia. And so we were kind of like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And as we were trying to get those shoes filled and trying to get things lined up, we were running out of time. Now we're on a wait list. Don't know that it's going to work. And then it finally is falling through. So we got to come up with another idea. So we began to recalculate. And Frank came up with a brilliant idea. There's going to be a lot of brilliant moments in this story. Came up with a brilliant idea. I know exactly what we'll do. We'll do something we've never done. So it'll be an adventure. We'll solve all of the issues in one thing. We're going to take an RV trip with Mr. Frodo because we can take him with us. This solves everything. We don't need somebody to watch the house. Button it up. We don't need anybody. We'll take Frodo with us. We're going to go on the road. We'll go to Virginia and Tennessee, maybe over into Kentucky. We'll just kind of zip around and see a few things, maybe stop and see a few friends along the way. And this will all work out. But of course, we don't have an RV, so we'll rent one, right? So we're going to rent an RV. We're going to go on this trip. Brilliant idea. Brilliant idea. So along with this, during a sabbatical plan, it's not just about going places and doing things, but it's also put together a plan, and the leadership team had a copy of this plan, and so they knew that part of the extended times with the Lord that I was going to be reading and studying through the Psalms. And so I put together a plan and said, look, from Psalm 32 to Psalm 51, I'm going to spend some time really reading and studying through the Psalms. That's going to be part of what's going to happen. Spend an extended daily times in prayer and with the Lord. I'm going to be reading. There were several books that had been recommended. I'm going to be reading through these books and studying. Books to help me, in vision casting for the congregation, those kind of things. And I'm going to journal. And there are a lot of different spiritual disciplines. That's not one of my favorites. I'm not really a journaler, right? I mean, I do it. I've got different journals that I've used, but that's not like a daily thing that I do to write down my thoughts, you know, so somebody can follow that paper trail. I'm just not into that kind of stuff, right? I like to be in and out and nobody knew I was there, you know, and I was like, okay, so anyway, but I'm going to journal and I'm going to put down just a brief. I'm not going to write a whole page, right? I'm not that introspective. I'm just going to put down some thoughts about what's going on a daily basis. And so I'm going to share with you a couple excerpts from my journal of things that I wrote down. And they're going to play into this story. There's a lot that happened, but I'm going to just stay in on one track here and all that unfolded. On May 17th, so we started May 6th, May 17th, this is my entry. A productive day yesterday, walking, riding, reading. However, experienced a little shortness of breath while cutting grass. Now, that's significant because that was the first time I ever documented it, ever wrote it down, or ever, in some ways, said it out loud to my journal, because I've never mentioned it to my wife. And it wasn't the first time, but it was the first time of note that I really kind of recognized, right? I was cutting the grass. I push my grass because it's therapeutic, right? Nobody can talk to me while I'm cutting my grass, right? I actually see something begin and end, right? People don't do that. So when you're in the people business, it's nice every now and then to see something started and something finished, right? Wow, I actually accomplished something, you know, so that's part of the deal. But as I was doing it, I started not feeling right, and I was getting this shortness of breath, and not typically what a lot of people had described. No sharp pains, no pressure like somebody standing on my chest, none of that. I started to get like a sensation right in the creases of your arms, where you bend it right here, of just kind of a ache, maybe I would call it a little ache. And then right across here, I would just get a burn sensation. But it was similar if you've ever run a race, right? And you run, and when you come across, you're just kind of going, just that burn that you kind of get like that, and then it just would go away. And so I didn't think anything about it, right? Because that would make sense. I just thought, hey, I'm getting older and out of shape. I just need to work out more, right? That's what the deal is. Anyway, so a few days later, another entry. We're getting closer to our RV trip. And I put in there, this is the weekend of the 19th, 20th of May. Said, Lorelei planted vincas while I tried to figure out the RV trip plan. And I put in all capital letters, rookie mistake. Because we've never done this before. We've never RV'd, never thought about RVing. Who knew? We decided to leave. Here's what I put. We decided to leave on Memorial Day weekend. I told you there's going to be a lot of brilliant moments in this thing. As I would discover, everything is booked for the weekend. Who knew that people that RV booked like Memorial Day weekend a full year in advance? Right? I didn't know that. I was like, really? It's that important or popular? People actually do this? You know, they want to find a subpar dwelling, right, and go spend it surrounded by strangers. There's a lot I would learn. But anyway, but here's what I put in here, and I want you to see this, because I put this in here, and I'm not even sure as I looked back and read this why I put it in. But I said, anyway, God is directing. And I finished with this. I said, you know, God is directing, maybe even corralling us towards something. That same morning, as I wrote that entry into my journal, I was also, as I was reading through the book of Psalms, I landed on Psalm 39 that day and began to read and study it. And two verses in that psalm really just kind of jumped out at me to the point where I underlined them in my Bible because they just really stood out. And I have them here in the program. So as I'm writing this, feeling like God is directing and corralling us towards something in the midst of my ignorance. And then I read this, Lord, just a strange prayer request inside this psalm. Lord, remind me how brief my time on earth will be. Remind me that my days are numbered, how fleeting my life is. You have made my life no longer than the width of my hand. My entire lifetime is just a moment to you. At best, each of us is but a breath. And that was all kind of coming together and taking place on the same day, the same morning. Anyway, we descended into RV hell, and I am dead serious. So we go and we pick up the RV. Of course, it's a rented RV, and it's the really nice RV, rented ones, you know, that have, like, literally on the door in the window, there's a doggy in the window, like, painted. There's a doggy painted in the window, so on the side of it, and people smiling and going like this, painted on the side of the RV. So, like, when you go down the road, it's like, you know, you're like a circus riding down the road, right? And so we get this thing, we get it home, we start to load it, and then we realize that what they call clean and what we call clean are way two different things. So we spent the next several hours, getting it to our level of cleanliness, right? Before we started packing it and filling it up with all of our stuff that we're going to take on this journey. So, because we had chosen Memorial Day weekend to take off on this RV adventure, everything was booked. There was no place to stay. However, we're going to figure that out. It's going to be good. We're going to go down to Fredericksburg, Virginia first, and we're going to stop, and we're going to get to see Pastor Chris at her church. So we're going to park this thing, and we're going to spend the night in the church parking lot. Right? And hey, it's a big church. They actually had an RV hookup at the back of their building. Right? No sewer, though. No water either, just the electric, but we did have electric. But anyway, we got there, picked up. It's like 100 degrees down in Virginia because we thought June would be the best time to do this, right? Memorial Day weekend, end of May and beginning of June. So I am going to share with you my lack of prowess and how idiotic I can be sometimes just because I've never done the RV thing, right? So one of the first things, that first night, we get to Chris's, and this is like the first, there was a comedy of errors that just led to this whole thing. So first thing, you know, we get there, and we're like, okay, well, look, we got a hookup, got electric, we got a full tank of water, so I'm going to grab a shower. Now, I'm a small guy, right? But I can tell you, I mean, I just stood there for a second, I went, how on earth does this work for somebody? I mean, if somebody was like 6'2", or, you know, I'm thinking, good grief, you know, I'm a small guy and this is like not that big. I'm thinking, man, this is ridiculous. But okay, right? So I'm going to do the thing because we only got tanks, only got so much water. So I'm going to do like, you know, the West Virginia camping thing that I'm used, you know, I'm used to that kind of stuff. So I'm going to wet myself, you know, wet yourself up, down, turn the water off, soap yourself up. You know how that rolls, right? Okay, so I do the whole thing. Wet myself completely down, get the soap out, and, you know, I'm follically challenged, so I don't have all that stuff you guys use, right? A bar of soap does everything for me, right? So I soap myself down 100%. Go to turn the water back on. None. So I was like, wow, really? So, I took the towel and wiped the soap off of me and went to bed. Only to discover the next day, I didn't know this. I've never done the RVing thing. Only to discover the next day, did you know that on the shower head, there's like this little button? Somehow, I guess, I had hit the button and turned the water off. So that when I turned it back on down here, nothing happened, and I was thinking, something's not right, right? I didn't know that button was up there. Idiot, right? Anyway, so, next day, So then we leave, we go from there. We had a great experience, great worship experience with the church, all that. We headed out, and we headed to Orange, Virginia, because we thought, okay, we're going to stop in and see friends. We're going to stop in and see Tom and Stacy Chapman. Tom and Stacy were part of this church for 4 or 5 years. They had returned to Virginia, where they were originally from, so we thought, well, we'll go stop by their place. We backed up into their driveway. He plugged me into his shed. He had a shop that was on a separate breaker and all that, and we hooked up there. No water, no sewer still. Still lots of soap scum residue on this boy, right? But we had a good time. We spent time with them, had dinner and all that, spent the night at their place. Next morning, we're finally going to head out, and we're going to go get our first KOA experience. So we head to Bristol, Tennessee, Bristol, Kingsport. And of course, my family, I wanted to go to a place. There's a place called Flag Pond, which is where my dad's people are from, up in the hills of Tennessee, where Tennessee and North Carolina and all that comes together. And so we're going to go find this place. And we got down into Flag Pond, which with this RV, I'm thinking, man, I hope we can get out of here, right? Because we were just going down into the mountains, and, you know, it's like straight up on both sides, and there's these mobile homes like on the side of a mountain where you're trying to figure out how did they even put that there, right? And there's nothing there. We get there, there's like a post office, a school, a garage, and a church, and that's it. That's the whole place. So I was like, wow, that was exciting, you know, so let's get out of here. So we head on, we get to the campground. Our first time ever going into a campground. It's Memorial Day, the evening of Memorial Day. So none of the staff is there, just people who are helping fill in, right? And we get there after hours. So we pull in, the guy says, oh, yeah, yeah, here's your key. You're going to go down here. We're going to back you into this place. We get our thing. We back up into our site. And I look around, and I mean, it's sun's going down, so it's not like, you know, real bad, but I'm thinking, there's no shade. This is just like, there is a tree right here that has a fire ring right at the bottom of it. There ain't a leaf on this tree. This tree is dead as all get out. And I'm thinking, that's a great idea. I start a fire, we're just going to light this whole thing right up. Right? Okay. So then I go to hook up. Wow, the electric cable and the hose that they provided with the RV aren't long enough to reach the connections. So I got to run up to the camp store and buy longer ones, right? So do that. Finally get that connected. I'm like, okay, a little frustrated by that, but I'm like, that's okay. So the only thing left to do here is to hook up the sewer thing, right? That's not a big deal, right? It's just a matter of taking the cap off because we haven't used any of that stuff yet. So just take the cap off, you hook the hose, put it in the hole, right? Got it, not a problem. But you kind of got to get down, because where it's low, it's like on the side of the thing, and you got to get down in there and reach under. And I pulled the lid off of it. And evidently somebody had used it. And out comes all kinds of stuff. And I was just like, really? You got to be kidding me. And about that time, the KOA dude rides by on the little golf carts. You know, they got to ride by all the time. And he goes, oh, man, that's messed up. And I said, really? He said, it's bad enough when it's your own. It's really bad when it's somebody else's. So I got up, and I was like, you know, He said, well, I'm going to go get some limestone. I'll put some limestone on that. It'll be all right. And, okay. So I run over to the bathhouse because I thought, I got to get a real shower anyway and definitely need one now. So I get the shower, get that all taken care of. I'm like, okay, whew, feel a lot better. You know what? This is going to go good. It's all right. We got past all that. I'm going to pull the stuff out. We'll get the campsite set up, get the grill going. This is going to be good, right? So start opening things up. You know, you got these compartments like all over the RVs, right? These things. And so I go over, open up one, you know, so I can reach in and get our chairs. We got a mat we can lay out, put the chairs out. Start that, go around to the other side to start opening up the other. And the key snaps off in the lock. The one key that we have. And once again, I went, really? You know, Lord, are you messing with me? And I couldn't believe it. I just stood there and I thought, okay, I can't even get into this stuff on the other side because I can't unlock it. So I can't get my firewood. Not that I would have a fire and burn the tree up that's here with no leaves. But now I got to crawl through this thing to try to get the other stuff out from the other side because I can't, right? And the guy comes by again. He goes, man, that's messed up. I was like. So get the channel locks out. Take the lock off the thing. Get the little piece of key out of it. So at least we got the pieces of key. Maybe there's somehow we can find a duplicate or maybe somebody's got one. But now I can't really lock that compartment. So when we leave and head toward Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, I have it duct taped shut as we're going down the highway. Right? Not on the same side as the waving people and dog. That's on the other side. This side's got duct tape on it. As we left there and headed for Pigeon Forge. So we got to Pigeon Forge, and this was a whole other KOA experience, completely different. This place was happening. 450-plus sites, right? There was over 100 buses at this place. It wasn't a campground. I don't know what it called. It's a parking lot that has little strips of grass, right? So you pull into this place. Hookups were easy. Hooked all up. Oh, that's nice and easy. But you know what? This is camping for people. You have people 10 feet that way. 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 And I thought, what the heck? You know, people enjoy this? Right? Of course, the whole time, Frodo is barking nonstop. The anxiety medicine we'd gotten for him really wasn't seeming to work. He did well when we were rolling down the road, but not when we would stop. And so whenever one of us would leave, or if we both left, he would literally bark the entire time, whether it was an hour, 45 minutes, or whatever. He would bark the entire time. He was safe. There's air conditioning going, right? But that doesn't what people know around you, right? Because now they're thinking you're one of those people that, like, leave your kids in the car and all that kind of stuff in the heat. And now they're going to try and bust in to save the day and all that. So you're just like, really? So we're having to take turns, Laurie and I, who's staying with Frodo? Are we bringing Frodo with us so he's not barking? We get kicked out of the campground by these people we really don't know or like that are staring at us from 10 feet away the whole weekend. What is this, right? And so anyway, we've started thinking about taking Frodo's anxiety medicine ourselves, right? Because I was like, it ain't working on him. Maybe it'll work for us. So, anyway, as we're at Pigeon Forge, and I was able to find a key they had in the office. This lady had a key ring like this, of all the different keys that people had either lost or left behind, and there was four of the one I needed. So she gave me one. So we solved the key dilemma. Now, during the whole time, we also had a leak. We had like this funky leak of stuff coming across the floor. And I was like, is this the water pump? I'm trying to figure out what it was. And it like smelled like trash. So every time you'd open the door, it was like, nice. We're back home. Well, when we started exploring, come to find out that underneath the sink, the trap in the kitchen sink was completely unthreaded and just hanging there. So some of the time, the stuff went down and went in the trap and out. Some of the time, like when you would wash your chicken off before you're going to go grill it, it didn't, and it would eat down, and that would kind of like drain across the floor. You know that chicken juice smell that kind of happens, right? So we finally discovered that and thinking, why would that be? That doesn't make any sense. So threaded it back up. Okay, we'll take care of the leak. Well, went under the sink, noticed we still got some water, paper towels are wet. Come to find out, I get down, actually get a flashlight out, start looking at it and go, aha, well, no wonder there's a problem. There's packing, not duct tape, not plumbing or electrical. There's clear packing tape on the sink where the gasket is supposed to be. And I was like, really? So I go back under, get my tools out, come down, pull all the tape off, get the gasket, reseat it, get it seated. It never was seated. Got to put under, screw it tight, got the trap, hooked back up. Voila. Finally, sink is good to go. No leaks. Praise the Lord, right? right? So we got the sink fixed. Frank knows how to use the shower now, right? And so we got the hookups going on. Things are getting better. Things are looking up, right? Except for Froda will not stop barking. So now we are living in this mobile prison, right? So we saw Tennessee through the windshield or through, right? And the air conditioning in this thing was unreal. It's like you're in there, what? We're talking to each other because the air conditioning is so loud, right? And I'm thinking, this is supposed to be enjoyable? Right? You go outside, it wasn't loud at all. They piled all the noise for the people that are inside of it, right? Oh, except for the dog. That goes right through the paper-thin walls, right? So everybody can hear Frodo barking, but they can't hear it air-conditioned. But we can hear it when we're inside, so we can't even talk to each other hardly, right? So anyway, as the RV thing, so we leave there, and we're headed for Charlottesville, Virginia. And I'm thinking, man, it's going to be a long down the road, but it's got to get better. And I have to say, Frodo was doing pretty good because on the road, he would relax. He chilled while we were traveling. So we thought, man, you know, Laura Lee and I can talk. We can see the beauty, no people around us. It'll be good. So June 2nd, we arrive into Charlottesville. We roll into Charlottesville late at night, or not late at night, but I mean later in the day. It's getting dark. The office is already closed. But I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be awesome. This is actually like a campground. There's trees. It's green. We're at a hole in the woods, right? That was kind of like we're doing lost cell service. Who cares, right? Don't need that. And we're going to be in there, man. There's people only 30 feet over there, but I can't even see them because there's trees. And oh, this is going to be awesome. So we finally pull in there. And I go to hook everything up. And all of a sudden, it had happened once or twice along the way, but I started having that feeling again. And this was just, I'm just hooking up the cables and the wires, the hose, and it's like I get this strange burning sensation again, but something was different this time. This time, usually as soon as I stopped whatever I was doing, it would subside, right? This time, I stopped, and it didn't go away. And I thought, man, something ain't right. So I go in, I sit down at the RV, and I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and Laura Lee is looking at me, and I guess, you know, I guess I had a different look on my face. And she said, are you okay? You all right? You feel all right? And I was like, no, I don't. I'm not sure. And again, because I've never said anything to her up to this point in time, didn't mention any of this, you know, so she's just throwing it out there. It means no harm. She just says, she goes, what, are you going to have a heart attack? Right? While she's grabbing something. And I go, I don't know. Well, the whole mood in the place changed, like, right? So on our cell block in there, we just things got really different. And so she says, well, are you going to be okay? I said, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to be fine. So I just need to rest for a while maybe. And but it wouldn't go away. And so, you know, we got ready and headed to bed. And so then, you know, I'm laying there, but I got this feeling it's not going away. It's not getting worse, but it's not going away. And so then your mind starts going, because you should be relaxing and not getting anxious. But, you know, you're feeling this way, so your mind's going. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, okay, we're in the woods in Charlottesville, Virginia, in a rented RV with all our stuff and our dog. If something goes wrong, this is just going to be a nightmare for Laura Lee to try to sort through this whole thing. She can't drive this thing. She's never driven anything like this, you know? And I'm thinking, okay, what are we going to do? What am I going to do? All right, so I'm praying. Okay, Lord, just let me make it through the night, right? Let me get through to the morning. Hold off on any of this, you know, if this is a heart attack coming or whatever. Please, just give me, you know, because for this sake, let me get back home where it's less chaos or whatever. So wake up the next morning. Feeling still there, a little bit better. So then I get up, do my usual pray, read the Bible, and I make this journal entry, June 3rd. Yesterday was a long day on the road for us, but Frodo did exceptionally well. It was worthy of note because 7 hours including stops, that's how long we were traveling that day. I said, today, change of plans. I've been feeling some shortness of breath and pain in the arms. So to be safe, right? Go to the hospital. No. So to be safe, we're going to cut the trip short, and we're heading for home this morning. So that was my plan. Let's buckle up. Let's secure everything. We're going to head home. Let's get home closer to where our kids are at. We'll go to the hospital. The plan was, let's roll up. We're going to roll into Anne Arundel. We'll go in the emergency room there. The kids live right there in Annapolis. It'll be a lot less chaotic. They can handle things. So we start to do that. We're going to do that. We pack up. That's the plan. We start heading out. But we want to stop at the office and let them know we're not staying for the next 3 days like we were supposed to. You know, we're going to head out. Well, in the meantime, Laura Lee decides that we need to make a phone call. But before that, I want to point your attention to this proverb, because it just kept coming to my mind. I wasn't reading it, wasn't thinking about it, but it just kept coming to my mind. Proverbs 16:9, where it says, "We can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps." It's something we need to be reminded of. It's not that you and I are passive or that we're spectators in this life. No. We're a part of it, and we do have decisions and choices and responsibilities, and we make plans. But we're not the only piece of the formula. And God is at work in the midst of this too. So, Laura Lee does get one phone call out in the intermittent service, because we're trying to find a signal as we're trying to tell this lady we're going to leave. And she finally gets a signal out long enough to call our daughter, Samantha, and she says, "Hey, something to the effect, we're going to be cutting the trip short. Your dad's not feeling good, having chest pain." And then the phone call dropped. And so then she got two more in, and I think words, chest pain, heart attack, something like that, and it kept dropping. Well, I guess on the other end of that, what it sounded like, my daughter went into call everybody mode, right? So all of a sudden, we're starting to get intermittent service and our phones start blowing up. There's texts coming in from my sister, my mother, from friends. "Oh, take it to the hospital. Go to the hospital. Take it to the hospital." So, you know, I'm trying to not get anxious here and have a heart attack. And now Laura Lee and I are arguing, right? And the text coming in and blowing up while we're trying to figure out. And then the lady comes in, "Hey, can I help you?" And Laura Lee goes, "Where's the closest hospital? I think my husband's having a heart attack." "No, I'm not having a heart attack," right? So we're going to argue about it, whether I'm having a heart attack or not. She says, "You can go 10 minutes that way or 10 minutes that way. You got one this way, or you can go to the trauma center this way." And I'm like, "Okay, trauma center, let's just go there. I'll satisfy and get everybody so that everybody will shut up. I'll go to the emergency room and we'll just get this taken care of real quick," right? So we make our way towards Charlottesville, a city we've never been in. And in my mind, I'm thinking, it's probably like Williamsburg or, you know, I don't know, maybe Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, something, you know. We start getting in there, and I'm like, well, this is a little more metropolitan than I thought it was going to be. And there's all these red brick buildings, old red brick buildings. In the middle of it, something that looked like Stark Tower, like, you know, jetting out of the middle of this thing. And I'm like, what the heck, that's the hospital? You know, and as we get closer downtown, I got this 30-foot, you know, RV, not a pull behind, this is like the motorhome, right? And I'm looking and going, where am I going to park this thing? And I'm looking around, I'm like, there's no street parking down in here. The parking garage are all 8.5 foot clear. I need 13 feet, right? And I'm thinking, what the, you know, so I'm looking around, I'm going, oh, man. So I get on the phone while I'm driving the RV through the town I've never been in, while I'm trying not to have a heart attack, right? And I say, I only know one person. I only know one person lives in, I'll call Bud Reedy, Pastor Bud Reedy. He's the pastor of the Nazarene Church in Charlottesville. Bud, I need your help. And he could tell, I guess, the urgency in my voice. He said, I need your help. He goes, that's awesome, man. He said, I'm Ocean Pines. How can I help you? I was like, dude, I'm in Charlottesville. He's like, I never leave Charlottesville. He said, what are you doing there? I said, I'm having chest pain. He said, you're not driving, are you? I said, yeah, and I can't park. You know, and he's like, are you kidding me? He said, man, get off the phone. He said, but you need to head to Martha Jefferson. Different hospital. There'll be plenty of parking. So we head over to Martha Jefferson. Looks like a resort. All kinds of parking. So we find a parking spot, back out of the way so people won't be hearing Frodo barking, come after us for some kind of, there's a tree, it's got leaves so we can have shade, fire up the generator, and then we hoof it across the parking lot. And by the time I get to the door, it's like, I'm having chest pains, right? And when you walk into an ER and you say that, If you I'm just not saying maybe think about it. If you're not getting attention in the ER, maybe it's not a good idea, but I'm just telling you. You walk in the ER and say chest pain, people appear. Right? It's like people appear, man. And it's like, whoom, right? Next thing you know, I'm back, shirts off, stickies on. I mean, it's just like all kinds of stuff. So here we are. We're in this city we've never been in a hospital we've never walked in the door of. We don't know anybody in this place. We know one person, and he's in Ocean Pines. So I know, like every ER visit, it's a 3 to 4 hour deal. I think that's a hidden policy somewhere, right? Somebody enters, you have to keep them for 3 to 4 hours. 2 aspirin, 3 to 4 hours. You got to keep them here. Right? So I'm like, we're going to be here for a couple hours. I know Laura Lee was stressing a little bit because she's still looking at me, giving me that look. Is this for real? Are you going to die? What's happening? And I'm like, and I'm just trying to think. And I just thought, so I want to share with you a cast of characters in Virginia that took part in this. And the first was, of course, Bud Reedy, who we called. The second person is, I said, call Stacy. Call Stacy Chapman. I don't know where she, how close it is to here or not, but can you call Stacy? And she calls Stacy. Stacy says, I'll be there in 30 minutes. Well, she was there in less than that. She must have sped because she was there in less than that. But all of a sudden, she's there with Laura Lee to kind of bring comfort to her, a familiar face, somebody you know, right? So we're in the emergency room. You know, now I'm in the little place, and they're talking, and this guy shows up. His name is Kent Hart, and he's a young guy that's training to be a pastor. And so Bud had called him, and so he comes in to sit with us, and then he says, look, if you need a place to park the RV, there's a place at my farm, you could do it. So he's just kind of doing the pastoral thing. And we're sitting there, and he's like, well, who is that? And I said, well, this lady was a part of our church for 4 or 5 years, but she lives here in Virginia. And, you know, he said, well, you need somebody to take care of the dog. And Stacy goes, well, I think I'd be glad to take the dog, you know, for the night if it looks like it were headed that way or not. And so about that time, the curtain flies back. And somebody goes, Pastor Frank, what in the world are you doing here? I said, Sarah, what in the world are you doing here? And she goes, I work here. I said, what? I said, what do you mean? I said, I thought you lived in Richmond. She goes, well, I live outside of Richmond, but I work here at Martha Jefferson. So Sarah Wise, who's the whole reason we're here to begin with, because she couldn't watch our dog, is now staring at me. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. We're in a city we have never been in a place we don't know anybody. And now, and Kent's like, who is that? I said, well, she's been a part of our church for, so now we got two people that are standing in my emergency room who have been a part of our church for several years, one who had actually stayed in our home multiple times and watched our dog. And so she comes in to give him my chest x-ray as part of the regimen, right? And so as that's going on, then Kent has to leave, and Laura Lee and Stacy go to get something to eat, come back. By that time, a guy named Clay Marsh walks in the door, and he's like, hey, man, how you doing? And I'm like, holy cow. And he says, dude, Pastor Bud called me and said you're at the hospital. I wanted to come see how you're doing. And he says, man, you know, he said, we told the guys, couldn't believe it, because I was their speaker at their men's event down at the Outer Banks 2 years ago. And he said, well, I wanted to come sit with you and pray with you. And so he comes and he sits and prays with me. In the meantime, they'd ruled out I hadn't had a heart attack, wasn't having a heart attack, but my blood pressure was so high that they wouldn't let me go, so I'm going to be spending the night. Stacy takes Frodo home for us so Laura Lee doesn't have to freak out, and she's staying with me in the room. So Clay leaves. Within a half hour Clay leaving, this guy named Gary Osteen walks in. He's not related to Joel, but smiles a lot like Joel. But Gary walks in, and he's like, Pastor Frank, what are you doing, man? And I'm like, this is crazy. He was another guy that was at an event where I was the speaker of in Virginia, at a different location. He's like, man, I heard you were in the hospital. I'm thinking, this is crazy. We've never been in a city. We don't know anybody in this place. I ain't been here 8 hours, and we got 5 people that know us that are showing up. And he spends some time with us, and then, of course, we spent the night. And so they decide the next day that we're going to start off with a nuclear stress test. And if you've ever had one, if you're anybody's here, so we're going to do a nuclear stress test. And I'm trying to have a cath. I don't want to do the stress test. I want to do cath. Because I've got, not only has all the phone been buzzing, Laura Lee took my phone away from me as soon as I was admitted. Just so y'all know this. She's like, you don't need to be messing with that. And she was right. But now she was trying to man her phone and mine, which were both kind of blowing up. And so get ready for the stress test. So all of a sudden, the guy knocks on the door that's coming to take me down to transport me for the stress test. And he looks at me. He goes, do I know you? I was like, man, you look familiar. He said, you're Pastor Frank. I said, he said, Sam. I said, Sam Gill. He said, yeah, man. Remember when you spoke down at the event? He said, I was down at the Outer Banks when you spoke at that event 2 years ago. So he's taking me to the stress test lab. And I get over there. Of course, he did some other things. Some kind of CT scan type deal went on. And then I went into the stress test lab. And so they're getting me all wired up and set for that. And the tech walks out, but the nurse is in there. And she goes, you're a pastor? And I said, yeah. We spent the next 10 minutes of her, like, unloading all kinds of things that she was wrestling with and her struggle with the church and this and that. And I'm just kind of going, okay. You know, I said, well, I listen. I mean, I talked to her a little bit. And I said, don't get disillusioned with the church over people. You know, if so, I'd have left a long time ago, right? So we're talking about it. And about that time, they said, okay, well, let's get this thing underway. And so they go to do the stress test, but my blood pressure was 205 over 110. So the guy went, okay, we're not going to do this right now. This is not happening. And I was like, what? And he's like, no, we can't be doing that. So they ended up sending me back to my room. And Laura Lee walked in. She goes, oh, that was fast. I said, yeah, I failed. And she's like, what? I said, I failed to be able to have the test. They wouldn't let me have the test because my blood pressure's so high. I said, you know what that means? She's like, what? No, I said, they're going to keep me another night until they can get my blood pressure down, which that's not down right now because I'm stressed out because my blood pressure's not coming down and I can't have this test. In about 5 minutes, this guy walks in, introduces himself. He's a cardiologist. He said, listen, Mr. Short, there's a couple ways we can play this. He said, we can either wait, try to get your blood pressure back down, try to attempt this stress test again. He said, or we can take it to a cath lab. I said, man, that's what I want. I was trying to push the cath lab the whole time because I have family members that work at the hospital, especially in cardiology, and head MRI. And the guy was like, my cousin's calling. He's like, you know, telling me to tell them what to do. And I'm like, dude, I'm kind of like in a position to like listen right now. And he's like, no, tell them you don't want the stress test. He said, that misses 15 to 18%. You know, he said, the only definitive test is a cath lab. He said, you need to do that. I said, yeah, I'll be sure to tell him that. You know, and I did try. I was trying to be polite, but I told him. So anyway, the guy said, look, we can do the cath lab. He said, I've already called the cath lab team, and they said, if I can get you down there by 2 o'clock, they can do it today. I was like, man, I'm in. He said, but if so, that means we got to leave like in 5 minutes. Got no place to be, right? So they whisked me down on this, and it's like, it was kind of cool, but not, you know, man, it's like you're in like a pit crew. Like you get in there, the curtain goes back, man, and people are shaving stuff and flying and doing this and that, you know, because they're trying to get you into this lab. And I'm just like, okay, hey, you know, none of them knew me. There was no Pastor Franks going on in that deal, right? And I get into the lab, and so they wheel me under the big screen TV, right? There's like a big screen TV right here. Can't really see it because it has an angle. But the guy starts talking to me. He goes, you know, hey, it's only going to burn for about 30 seconds. It's going to burn for 30 seconds. I'm like, okay. He was right. Right? But then it was cool. You know, and I'm just kind of laying there. And he's talking to somebody. Like, he had like a command room back there. Somebody. He was talking to somebody. But I just knew that they had a really good playlist. Because it was like 80s. It was 80s classic rock. And I was like, that's awesome. Right? Except for when it got to the Mike and the Mechanics. And it was like, all I need is a miracle. And I was just like, man. Like, dude, you know, it's better than Highway to Hell, but I mean, I was like, right? I was like, whoa. So all of a sudden the guy says, hey, Mr. Short. Yeah. He said, you know, this is how I make my living, man, right? He said, stents and all that is my bread and butter. He said, so I hate to turn away business. And I was like, he said, you're a bypass candidate. And I just kind of was like, because that meant a whole lot of things. It meant I wasn't going home in the morning like I was thinking I might. But here's the other thing it meant, which also provides or proves my being an idiot. See, because all kinds of tapes started playing, because this cardiac bypass thing had been my whole life growing up. You see, my father had his first cardiac event when he was 34 years old that ended in a triple bypass surgery. He had his second cardiac event at 44 that ended in a quadruple bypass. He had his third cardiac event at 49 that also ended in another quadruple bypass. And then he died of congestive heart failure at 55. So all those tapes and all those times of watching my dad recover from these surgeries. Of course, we're talking 74 and 84, much more primitive. But I just remember my dad being in a hospital bed for a year at home the first time trying to recover. And I just, all of that started going through my mind. I thought, oh my gosh, what is coming? And so he says, I'm going to meet you over in the other room. We'll talk to you in a minute. Of course, all along, everybody had been saying, well, that's okay, that's okay. Look, we're going to do this, but the worst case scenario is a bypass. But right, it was always worst case scenario, you know. And then all of a sudden, the doctor comes in, looks at Laura Lee, says, it's going to be a bypass. So we've arrived at the worst case scenario. And he says, I'm going to come in and show you the pictures. He says, Mr. Short, here's the deal. He said, all three of your major arteries have blockages 90%. And he said, you have two additional secondary branches that are blocked 80%. He said, so we're going to be sending you over to UVA. He said, you're going to be in great hands. He said, that's what they do. And he said, we're going to head you over there. And he said, good news is you've never had a heart attack. He said, so your heart has sustained no damage. He said, but I will tell you, he said, with these blockages, if you did have a heart attack, it's not a good outcome. He said, so this is your window. You're in the right place at the right time. So they loaded me up. And we're going to transfer over to UVA. Of course, they said, Laura Lee, you're going to have to find a ride over there because you can't be transported with the patient. She's like, well, what am I going to drive? I can't drive the RV over there. What am I? Right? And we already were known in this hospital. We're the RV people. Yes, we're the people that have the RV that's out there. Everybody can see. Right? That's right. We're the ones that were on vacation and now we're in the hospital. Yeah, and everybody was like, oh, you feel bad for us. Right? You know, and all this stuff. So anyway, Laura Lee calls Sarah, and Sarah transports and takes Laura Lee over to UVA. I eventually make it over there a couple hours later, right? I actually went out in the hall and searched and found a phone and just jumped on it and let her know I wasn't coming yet. I was like, I don't know where these people are supposed to be transporting me. I knew you dial 9, you can get out anywhere, right? So I was like, So they finally come and get me, and when we wheel around, and the first thing about UVA, and this will be the last thing I'll share this morning, is that as I come around the corner on the gurney or on the stretcher, and here's windows, and there's the waiting room, and I see Sarah, and I see Laura Lee, and I see my sister. My sister's already driven down from New Jersey. She's already here making it to the hospital before I am. Wow, that's awesome. Or not, right? Because this is that good. This isn't good, right? And as they're taking me around and wheeling me into the cardiac unit, the nurse who was waiting for me, she was mad because her patient wasn't there and wanted to know where was her patient, right? So she was kind of giving somebody and I come around the corner. They're wheeling around the corner. And she turns around. This is how I meet my nurse in the cardiac unit. She turns around and says, "Speak of the devil," and there he appears. Both the Hispanic guys that were taking me, of course, we had already had the conversation. They're going, he's a pastor. He's a pastor. Right? And then she was like, oh, I'm sorry. I was like, nah, I've been called that before. Don't worry about it. Right? So I will tell you this. I want to point out this in closing. Romans 8:28. We know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to His purpose for them. In a place we had never been, in a hospital we'd never walked into, in a city we only knew one person who wasn't there, all kinds of people had showed up that we knew, having no clue they were even around that area. God doesn't cause everything. That's how some people misread this verse. It's not saying God is the causation of everything. Sometimes our ignorance causes things. Sometimes others' negligence causes things. Sometimes the enemy of our soul and the evil presence in our world causes things. Right? Sometimes just the fallen nature of the place in which we live causes things. But God causes everything to work together for our good. And I will tell you, for that, I am very, very grateful. While I had no control over what was happening, never did I feel things were out of control, because I had trusted who was in control. To be continued.